It's also believed to be, whether rightfully so or not, the best training ground for the number one spot, which is president.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, what lessons remain from 1972 for the 2024 election? Well, obviously, we're in an unprecedented time in national politics. Democrats are arguing among themselves about whether the nation's oldest president in history should even be running for another term in November, while Republicans are almost unanimous in their desire to renominate a fellow senior citizen who's now a convicted felon and has been impeached twice. As former President Donald Trump picks his running mate and President Joe Biden pledges to stay in and win the race, I started thinking about an interview I did back in 2012 about the national ticket, health, and party loyalty. Joshua Glasser wrote The 18-Day Running Mate, McGovern, Eagleton, and A Campaign in Crisis, and I thought it was a good time to revisit those unsettled 1972 conventions and see if there are any lessons for 2024. In that race, Senator Thomas Eagleton was dropped from George McGovern's ticket after it emerged that Eagleton received electroshock treatment for depression in the 1960s. Of course, President Richard Nixon went on to a resounding re-election win. Okay, here's that 2012 interview with Joshua Glasser.
Well, the McGovern campaign had a series of distractions that kept them from getting to the vetting soon enough, or when they needed to. One being that the campaign, while it was pretty clear that McGovern would win the nomination, it wasn't a done deal by the time of the convention. So the McGovern organization was spending the first days and all the days leading up to the convention staving off the anyone but McGovern coalition of other Democrats, the Democratic establishment, that were out to prevent McGovern from being the standard bearer of the party. Remember, McGovern was considered a radical leftist candidate for acid, amnesty, and abortion, and the establishment, the labor leaders of the party, didn't like what he stood for and didn't want that to be the party's embodiment.
Eagleton was not the first choice on the list of vice presidential candidates. I was interested to learn that even Walter Cronkite of CBS News was under very serious consideration, at least by the candidate himself. Who else was on that list?
And that brings us to another distraction, which was the Ted Kennedy distraction. Ted Kennedy was McGovern's first choice by far. He would do anything to get Ted Kennedy on the ticket. The question was, like, how many fingers you were willing to lose to get him. That's what McGovern's political director, Frank Mankiewicz, said at one point. The campaign's internal polling, despite Chappaquiddick being just a few years before, said that with Kennedy on the ticket, McGovern had his best chance of beating Nixon come the fall. So Kennedy is another reason why vetting was left to the last minute. Cronkite, he was mentioned by Mankiewicz. He was the most, Cronkite, known as the most trusted man in America. Why not have him on the ticket? Plus, he told Mankiewicz privately that he was, he couldn't stand the Vietnam War. But he wasn't really a serious contender. Higher up on the list were Walter Mondale, who declined because he didn't want to run for his re-election to the Senate at the same time he was being a vice presidential candidate. Also, Abe Ribicoff, senator from Connecticut. Kevin White, mayor of Boston. McGovern asks at that final day of the convention. Eventually, there are issues with Kevin White that he runs into. Gaylord Nelson, senator of Wisconsin. Pat Lucey, governor of Wisconsin. Sergeant Shriver, who they later pick once Eagleton's off the ticket. But at the time, at the convention, Shriver was overseas in Moscow on business. Yeah, so Eagleton was sixth pick that day. McGovern eventually picks Eagleton because he came highly recommended by Senator Nelson of Wisconsin and also Senator Kennedy.
Now, Eagleton is sitting around in another hotel. The convention's in Miami, and there's sort of rival camps set up all throughout the Democratic establishment. As you mentioned, he thinks he doesn't have a shot at it by the end of the convention, finds out he's on the ticket. What did the McGovern campaign see as his strengths, not knowing, of course, the background, or at least only hearing rumors at this point, but what did they think he could bring to the ticket?
Yeah, with the McGovern campaign being such an outside insurgent campaign, a surprise, a long shot for obtaining the nomination that year, Eagleton was thought of as a link to the party establishment, even though he was young and against the Vietnam War, strongly so. He had strong relationships with labor, with the urban establishment, with the white ethnics in the party, and yeah, he's a very strong campaigner, personable, handsome, Catholic, strong debater, well-liked senator. He was a charismatic figure. The link to the establishment was really key there.
And also you note in the book that he had particular interest in the position. Meanwhile, McGovern's calling up Ted Kennedy, can't convince him to join. Why was Eagleton so interested in being the vice president when for many people that's sort of, it's a consolation prize that they don't even want?
Yeah, but it's also believed to be, whether rightfully so or not, the best training ground for the number one spot, which is president. And everyone always thought Eagleton was eventually going to be president of the U.S., the wunderkind of Missouri politics. People always thought that Eagleton would get to that highest spot. And because Eagleton was just a junior senator, 4 years in the Senate at the time he was picked, this was a way of expanding his reach, his appeal, and making him a household name. When Eagleton was first selected, people said, "Tom who?" No one had really heard of him outside of Missouri and the District of Columbia, where Eagleton was chairman of the D.C. committee in the Senate. Back then, there wasn't home rule for D.C. So running for vice president, being vice president, is a way to boost that brand recognition and get to that highest office. And also, Eagleton thought he had a great shot of helping McGovern win. And the ultimate goal was beating Nixon. And if Eagleton was the guy that could do it, as he really thought he could, then of course he's going to accept the job. Kennedy had very valid reasons for not wanting to join the ticket. Being the last surviving Kennedy brother, he had an obligation, felt he had an obligation to his family. He wanted to stay in the Senate. He didn't feel that he could overcome Chappaquiddick. But McGovern didn't listen to those excuses and thought that Kennedy couldn't resist the temptation in the heat of the convention, and you would never be able to say no to the call of the party. So that's why Kennedy eventually says no.
All right, well, let's move ahead in the story a little bit. Eagleton's on the ticket. Some of the rumors are now coming out. We've got a couple dogged newspaper reporters picking up the trail of this past depression or alcoholism, whatever the rumors were at the time. And finally, the two halves of the ticket meet in South Dakota. Why does McGovern at that moment say, "Yes, I'm sticking with you"?
Everyone said that one of McGovern's defining qualities was decent. Robert Kennedy called him the most decent man in the Senate. So McGovern was reaching out to his teammate in a time of distress, responding as the decent George McGovern, who really believed that Eagleton had overcome his past treatment for depression. He wanted to listen to Eagleton and say, you know, this is a thing in his past. He had gotten over it. He had served successfully in the Senate for 4 years, came highly recommended by some of the most respected members of the Senate. He believed he could hack it if he said so. Also, McGovern's daughter had been treated for depression just a year before. And a part of McGovern wanted to believe that she too could overcome depression and reach the highest levels of office or professions. And telling Eagleton that he wasn't fit would have been telling his daughter, Terry, she wasn't fit either. And she couldn't overcome her past. So there was that very personal, very human element to it. And remember, these guys are meeting in South Dakota in a small cabin with their wives by their side, miles away from Washington. It wasn't a cold, cool political decision that they were making at that time in that environment.
A few days later now, about a week, they've come back together in Washington. The circumstances have changed. What happened during that time between South Dakota and Washington that ultimately changed McGovern's mind?
The public reaction is just too strongly against Eagleton. Many people don't think that Eagleton could hack it. There are doubts about whether he was fit to have his finger on the metaphorical button, especially in a nuclear era. Also, the muckraking Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Jack Anderson goes to the air with allegations that Eagleton had also had a history with drunk driving, and these allegations aren't true, but McGovern's campaign lost trust in Eagleton, even though the Anderson allegations enable Eagleton to sort of seize the offensive and say, look, here's this journalist hitting me when I'm down. And Eagleton is able to present himself as the good guy in this. And eventually there's the lost trust and the political calculation. But on the final day, there's also the medical decision. McGovern finally, even though Eagleton had been dodging it, wouldn't release the records. McGovern campaign hadn't been able to connect with Eagleton's doctors. But at the final Monday evening meeting, which was presented as the showdown between the running mates, McGovern gets on the phone with the two doctors. And those conversations make McGovern ultimately decide that he couldn't have Eagleton on the ticket, even though like the political calculation was such that Eagleton shouldn't stay anyways. But Eagleton says, as a condition of him getting off, that McGovern isn't allowed to say that what the doctors told him was ultimately the deciding factor. He had to justify it as a political decision, that the need for party unity demanded that Eagleton leave, that the campaign had to return to the issues. Because if the medical calculation was what did it, then how could Eagleton salvage his political career in the Senate, which he was able to do? So, I mean, there's a side that said maybe the doctor's determination was wrong, but there's the unpredictability of depression, of bipolar disorder, that is scary to some people when you're talking about someone who's potentially in line to be president of the United States. Senator is one thing, but people said president is quite another.
You know, we're in an election year now, and I was thinking about the last election, and that was one of the more popular vice presidential picks. What does it mean? How much thought went into this? Elections we've had, certainly, since 1972. Sarah Palin, in a lot of circles, is blamed for dooming the McCain campaign. Others say this was an Obama Democratic year, and McCain didn't have a chance no matter what. Laying that on the table, let's look back to 1972. How much blame does McGovern place on the Eagleton distraction for dooming the campaign? Or was it just an impossible uphill battle against Nixon, and no matter who was on the ticket, they would have lost?
Dropping Eagleton and how McGovern comes across through the whole debacle as incompetent, as conniving, as a politician first, not the decent guy he claimed to be. I mean, people thought of McGovern, and McGovern presented himself as open, as above politics, and the whole 18 days show a different side of McGovern that people didn't like. And I mean, picking a vice president is the big defining test and decision of these potential presidents. And if McGovern botched this decision, how could you trust him to make other key decisions when the going is tough? So there's that. There's also Eagleton claimed that he was just one rock in the landslide. But McGovern says landslides begin with a single rock. So that's to say that, yeah, McGovern probably would have lost anyways, but Eagleton really contributed to the magnitude of McGovern's defeat that fall. it just began the unraveling of George McGovern, the supposed saint.
What did their relationship look like in the years after the 1972 race?
So they each served in the Senate for at least another term. Eagleton actually served for two terms. McGovern lost re-election at first in 1980. So McGovern, unlike Eagleton, involuntarily left the Senate. First, obviously, it was very, even though they campaigned together in the fall as a show of like that they had moved on, the relationship was obviously cool. Eagleton didn't like that there were rumors or true rumors slipping out that it was actually the medical decision that led to his withdrawal, that, oh, if only the country knew what the doctors really told McGovern, things would be different. But eventually they come to impart respect for each other, for their service, for their leadership. And now McGovern says he regrets his decision to drop Eagleton. He said he thinks he would have probably lost anyways, but it was the wrong decision, given that he knows he claims more about depression than he knew then. He wrote a book on Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln had depression. So that shows, even though Lincoln served in a quite different era than the nuclear age, it was still a time of stress. And Lincoln's widely considered to be one of the nation's best presidents. The relationship, though cool at first, becomes better over time. And I mean, the Eagleton story is a story of political resilience in a lot of ways. Eagleton, 2 years after suffering the biggest embarrassment any politician could face, being dropped from a national ticket, and having one of his deepest secrets vented to the entire nation, debated by millions of Americans, consuming the newspapers and television news coverage. He wins re-election by wide margins to Senate from Missouri. He goes on to serve another two terms and leaves voluntarily from the Senate, widely respected senator. And when the Senate had its bicentennial, Eagleton was one of two senators or former senators asked to speak at that event. And that was a huge honor. One Democrat, one Republican. And Eagleton was the Democratic representative. So Eagleton was able to remake himself.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.